Hey, welcome inside the MTOM podcast host site here at Iowa PBS. We're outdoors because it's hot and humid. It feels like Iowa State Fair weather. And the last time we talked to Greta Irwin was at the Iowa State Fair. We'll get into the conversation, the back and forth, the reason they do the stand that they do. But really, we're talking turkey today. Two big events happened for the turkey industry in the state of Iowa this week. One involved a new research facility at Iowa State University. The other is an event that they're reliving, but not to the case that they had in 2015. We're going to talk about avian flu and how things have been managed inside the industry, what's different this time between the two outbreaks. We'll also discuss some other future things that are happening with the turkey industry. If you have any feedback for me, hit me up at paul.yeager@iowapbs.org. Every Tuesday, a new episode comes out. Subscribe on the YouTube channel or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and never miss an episode. Let's now get and talk turkey with Greta Irwin. I know you've looked at the weather forecast. It certainly feels like state fair weather. The last time you and I spoke was at the state fair in person. I want to say that was 2019. It might have been 2018. Time gets away from me. But it certainly feels like state fair weather out there.
It does. And, you know, state fair is less than 100 days away. And so a lot of thought and preparing is already going into place for the next great Iowa State Fair.
Well, and I will say, still one of my favorite foods that I did not know about prior to our interview was the turkey tenderloin.
Yeah, it's a great product. It's taking that turkey breast meat, we marinate the breast meat and grill it and put that into a hot dog bun. And it's just a wonderful sandwich that we have a very faithful following of that cut and that turkey item.
See, it's one of those secret things, and I love those long established that some people think they know everything about the fair. Some fall victim to all the great new stuff, and don't get me wrong, it's all great and new. But those that know the classics, and you're in an area where there are a couple of things that are super classic, and you know it's a good, both good value, good tasting, and it gets the job done.
It does. It does. And, you know, it's such a great tradition that the Iowa turkey industry has been doing for a number of years. And we look forward to seeing folks again at the Iowa State Fair.
And between the time we talked in person, I mean, you send press releases and things like that, and I see those. But one that caught my attention not too long ago was we had an Iowa couple that raised the White House turkey. The official White House turkeys, Ron and Susie Cardell in Walcott. And so, you know, turkey's kind of always on my mind. Turkeys are obviously always on your mind. Then comes Monday. Now, the thing about, and the reason I bring up the Cardells and their turkey is that those turkeys went to Ames and Iowa State University. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't, the difference between then and now is night and day. You had a pretty big week this week. What happened?
We did. You know, the Iowa turkey industry and the turkey farmers specifically are always talking about how we can continue to do things better. What's the next thing we need to know in order to provide the turkeys the best care that they can receive, to make them the healthiest birds that they can be, and then the consumers can receive the best product that is available. And this discussion's been going on I've been around for about 27 years in this position, and I'd say this type of discussion's gone on, and we've done a lot of work with Iowa State University and their team of researchers over the years, but it became pretty obvious there was not any facilities in the United States that a farmer could go to, an industry company could go to and say, I have this question. Let's talk about it. Let's put some research behind it and let's get some answers to improve. And the farmer stepped up and said, we need to build a new research facility at Iowa State. The farms, the barn that was there, and this is just southwest of campus in Ames, were about 50 some years old. And so obviously very dated and not to the state of the art of technology that we really need right now in our industry to get good information. So a committee was formed. We partnered with Iowa State University. And after about 7 years of working together, we were able to dedicate a new facility on Monday. So it was really an exciting day.
Industry that is evolving. I mean, you're still... I guess it goes back to the very first thing that you said, the tastiness of your product. I mean, that's what has evolved the pork industry, the beef industry. It's also evolved the turkey industry, too.
It has. As we look at the consumers in the 1950s and 60s, it was mostly whole turkeys. Today, consumers are demanding more value-added product. And what might be that next opportunity we have to meet that needs of the consumer in the kitchen, wanting to fix something that's quick and easy and convenient and not a whole turkey? So we see the popularity of the deli meats and the deli sandwiches, and we see ground turkey as a big staple in a lot of homes, as well as the turkey tenderloin, turkey breast cuts. And then we're putting a lot of energy nationwide with the National Turkey Federation behind smoking of turkey cuts. And so the Kansas City Royal, which is obviously the head and the premier grilling event in the United States, now even has a turkey category. And so we're working with consumers, we're working with grillers right now to say, hey, have you ever thought about putting a turkey breast on the grill or a turkey thigh meat and smoking that product? And boy, those folks that are grillers are just literally eating this up. They have enjoyed this product and enjoyed learning something new and working with a new cut of meat and found turkey to be very excellent on the grill.
Well, I know, again, back to the very first thing we talked about, I know that you grill at the fair, but I never think to do it on my grill at home. So thank you for the idea. Another thing to try. And that's, again, about finding markets, about finding new ways to expand the population. Let's wrap up with one before we get into another part of the turkey story right now. But this building, you just got mentioned over and over again. I would imagine it was a little embarrassing for you, but it clearly shows you were at the forefront of this partnership. You talk about a committee. It's easy to say Blue Ribbon Task Force, but why was it important to continue to put so much effort into this and to continue and to really to find a place in the country that will now be known as the Turkey Capital?
Exactly. Well, I'm always under the strong belief that if you have a commitment and a strong desire for something to happen, you need to be present and you need to be participating in order to make sure that happens. And so I take the information I hear from my members and take that to the university. And so, yeah, I was present quite a bit just because I wanted to ensure that the needs of my farmers and the needs of our industry were heard and recognized in the discussion and the preparation. And it was. We would have a weekly conference call, and I was part of that opportunity. Sometimes questions would come up, and I would say, oh, is this really the right thing we want for the cement on the floors of the barns? I'd take that back to the farmers and bring it back to the committee, and making sure that this facility was done properly to industry standards, but yet met the needs for the researchers at the same time, which is sometimes a little different things, but I think we really came to a nice common space to this. And what's really unique about this facility, Paul, is we will be able to take day-old poults, just like we get on the turkey farms. The genetic companies are going to work with us and make sure we get the poults that we need. And we'll need about 1,600 poults at one time to do the research. We can engage with nutritionists, immunologists, gut health people, physiology, microbiologists, folks in genetics, people at the vet college, bring in some of the meat quality folks as well that we have at Iowa State University. So we can do everything from that little itty-bitty poult to the processing plant, because a lot of these birds will end up going through one of our turkey processing plants in Iowa, and that research can really be full circle. And to me, that's one of the strong uniquenesses, is that Iowa State University has so many components, so many people that we can tap on the shoulder and say, we have this project, we need your expertise. And then you add in the new feed mill that's going up, that's probably going to open next summer. Then we have that ability to really do small batch feeds, talk about how do we take the corn, how do we take that soybean that is so valuable to our state's economy and add more value to it through the turkey. And I think you maybe caught that, Paul, in the ceremony, but the facility is named after Dr. Stanley the Balloon. And to me, it fits into the Iowa turkey story so well. Dr. Balloon came from a small family farm in Tama County, worked himself up through the ranks and did different things, came back to Iowa State University, got his degree at the age of 44, and ended up teaching and working on the soybean. And how do we utilize the soybean into turkey diets? So this would have been the late 40s, early 50s, into the 60s, when really soybeans were new on our crops and new on our fields. And one of the things the soybean farmer desired is, how do we then feed that to livestock? Dr. Balloon, who is the facility is named after, took that vision, took that need forward, and figured out how to put that turkey feed in, or turkey feed, to make it where soybeans were part of it. And so folks can come out, visit the facility, and when they walk in, there's a nice dedication to Dr. Balloon. And I have a chart up that does show the turkey diets back in the 40s, where there were no soybeans and very little corn. And then by the 70s, how much corn and soybeans was in that diet, and how we were replacing things like fish meal and fish oils that I think would have to be really expensive, let alone hard to get into Iowa. Let's use oils that we can produce in Iowa. And that's what we did. And so I think this facility in so many ways encapsulates the desire of the Iowa turkey farmer, the personality of the turkey farmer, and the drive of this industry to continue to improve, to continue to get new knowledge, and to really, as a group, work together to solve problems. And that's what I've always been proud of with this group. And that's really what this dedication on Monday to really brought together.
Put it into perspective of using the soybean in the 40s. We haven't even gone to the moon yet at that point, let alone talked about it. Or the I would imagine, I guess I should have looked up the number of acres we had in soybeans in Iowa or in the country was substantially lower than it is today. So to think of already a value add for a product that also was helping. He wasn't necessarily doing the research for the soybean industry, but let's face it, soybean meal is something we talk about all the time on Market to Market about how that adds. I mean, we also hear it just down the road from you. I often think about the revolutions they've done in the ethanol industry to take that dried distiller's grain and use that for feed. And why can't you do that for just what you've done with beef, do it with turkey, and do it with other animals. So Dr. Balloon has a large, I won't say shadow, but a large presence in the field. So to have his name, then have his family come to the dedication was probably special as well.
It really was. And I love that Jim, his son, quoted that one of Dr. Balloon's quotes that he used a lot was just, get up and do something. And I think those words are probably going to end up in the hallway somewhere at the research facility for the students to see and for folks to think about that. You know, that's what's made agriculture great, is we see an issue, we have a question, we get up and we do something. And the partnership we've had with Iowa State University, the way that they've helped support our industry in so many different ways over all these generations is something that we just cannot celebrate enough. And it was really a simple decision when my board said we need to do something. Iowa State was the only people we could think of to go that has all of these pieces that we can pull together from the vet college, from the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. We even partner some with the National Animal Disease Center because they do some turkey research as well. So what we have here in Ames is really special. It's special to the turkey industry, and I think it'll just continue to elevate that opportunity for students. Because if you're a student and you're thinking about agriculture, you can now come and interact with turkeys. You can interact with hogs and cattle and dairy cattle and chickens. And everything is there. And to me, that's really exciting to be a part of that. And I think the new feed mill will really help cap that all off and give the industry a lot of research and support. But yet more importantly is to give students that opportunity to engage with all of us, to explore their career options and find where their real passion is at Iowa State.
One of the guests at the dedication was Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Naig. He didn't try to be Debbie Downer to the event. He was more of the realist of what's facing the industry right now. He started talking about HPAI, the bird flu that has come across. I mean, the turkey industry, the poultry industry in general has, again, have to deal with this thing that's coming across the country. But it's not moving like it did the last time that we talked about this in 2015. What's different?
What's different is in more states, and we are seeing it in more variety of populations. So it's in some of the backyard flocks, as well as in the commercial turkey and egg layers, and then still a few of the broilers as well. So the depth and the scope across the country is greater. How it's spreading is obvious, migratory. You start seeing where the cases are now. We had a case in Michigan yesterday. Minnesota apparently is having a lot of cases. So obviously these are birds that are migrating north that are have the virus. They don't get sick from it. They're not dying necessarily from it, but they're carrying the virus. And so that virus is shed in their feces. That feces somehow ends up inside a barn or on a worker or on a piece of equipment. You know, how it comes from the outside in is always what we're trying to struggle and work on to make sure we have the best biosecurity. But that's really the challenge that we're facing. You know, you see these flocks fly over your head and you can hear them a lot of times, or we see them sitting out in fields or in ponds. Those are the carriers. That's where the virus is coming from.
But the difference also between 2015 is it seems that the outbreaks are less, or they're isolated in different areas. I mean, I think Secretary Naig talked about it, and I know I've heard you discuss this, so well, the transmission is different this time. But biosecurity has always been something that I always think about with the hog industry and the poultry industry of, you know, shower in, shower out, or, you know, changing shoes, and nothing goes from farm to farm. And, you know, we've identified all those things. That's all from research. Mm-hmm. And trial and error that we figured out what has worked and has not worked. So clearly lessons have been learned since the last time this happened.
Very true. And if anything we're seeing, for example, in Iowa, we've had 9 cases so far this year. We had 71 in 15. So definitely a lot less cases. It's looks like it's going to be about the same duration of time. It started earlier. Hopefully it'll end a little bit earlier. But the number of cases is lower than we had in 15. So like you said, Paul, the biosecurity, the things that we're doing on the farms, the things farmers are doing is working. But obviously it's still a very serious situation that it's on all of our minds.
Well, and one of the reasons I wanted to listen to the dedication on Monday was I was curious about the biosecurity side of this center. What I'm guessing, go back 7 years, we're right at that 2015 time frame. Was that on the mind then about we need to have better biosecurity research and understanding and development, or did that just kind of, that was a foregone conclusion you were going to include that in the research part of this center?
Yeah, the biosecurity side of this was always foremost. So everyone who enters into the research area with the turkeys is a shower in and shower out type of a facility. The facilities that were there prior to this were just barns, and so there really wasn't a showering in and out component. The Hamilton Center with the egg layers and broilers did have shower in and shower out, but the outlying barns that we had that were old and dated did not have that. So definitely a big part of it, big component is to have that biosecurity for those folks that will be in and interacting with the turkeys.
And then will there be any interaction with USDA's facility that's there in Ames too, or at least crossover work?
Possibly. You know, it depends on the product, you know, type of research that we're doing, and if their expertise can join in. Most definitely. They were at the groundbreaking, and they were excited about the facilities, so we definitely see that there could be some cross-collaboration with them as well.
Geography helps when you're so it close does. By, right? Hey, we're the folks just over here on the southwest. I know you're on the northeast side of town, but we're your neighbors. We all meet at the same place.
Yep, we do. And we have research committee meetings here in Iowa that is all of us together, so that the NADC folks as well as Iowa State folks, we're constantly talking and working together. And that just makes our resources go better, but the knowledge and the ability to share across the the departments and the universities and the agencies, I think is wonderful.
I know you're also an economist. You do some of those types of studies and you look at things. What's the big, what's been the big story here the last couple of years in the industry on the economy wise? Let's start with the farm. I mean, how have turkey farms, turkey processing before it gets to the consumer? How's that fared?
Well, I think everyone going through COVID and employees didn't fare real well through that time period. It was a struggle sometimes to ensure we had enough people to do the processing and to do the work that needed to be done. And so that did result in changing a few things. So maybe we're not going to further process something. We're just going to slaughter the turkeys and create primal cuts of meat and then send them somewhere else to be further processed. A little bit of that happened. The turkey market in general held fairly steady because people were still eating at home. Deli meats, ground meats, breast meat cuts, those types of things were still very common in the household. So we feel somewhat optimistic that those things can come around and move forward. In general, I think we're pretty optimistic that turkey has a really great future on people's diets and on their plates and then on their protein choices to continue to enjoy turkey as an option and look for new and exciting ways of it in the stores, because there's a lot of talk about how can we get the consumer to think beyond the whole bird into a lot of these other products and a lot of other ways that we can enjoy turkey.
Well, yeah, we got to get the grill out and smoke that thing. That's one of those ways that you're talking about.
I know, and that's just such a great way. You know, you have a long weekend or just a weekend, and you know, brine that turkey and put it on the smoker. There's just nothing better than really good smoked turkey meat.
I could really put you on the spot and say I need your best brine recipe, but we'll save that maybe in the comments or something. Before we go, Greta, just the disease issue is one headwind. As we all try to figure out the consumer and what they're going to do, and inflation issues and that volatile side. What's the best, I mean, you mentioned an optimistic outlook for the industry. What are some other things that we're going to be seeing here in the next 6 to 12 months in your industry that we need to kind of be watching?
6 to 12 months, what are we going to see? I think we'll continue to have a lot of discussions on the grain market. I know my farmers requested at our summer meeting to have a speaker talk about grain markets. What can they expect from their number one input cost, meaning feed, of the future? So there'll be lots of discussions on that. We'll continue to talk about avian influenza and the response. We'll have some meetings coming up here with the Iowa Department of Agriculture, and we'll be going to DC in July, and we'll talk some more about that with folks. So that will continue to be front and center legislatively what we'll be talking about. So the response went really well, but there's always lessons to be learned and things we can do better the next time. So in the next 6 to 12 months, we'll work through some of those opportunities and continue to look at ways just to grow and support the turkey industry here in the state of Iowa.
Always a good time, always a good chat, and I'll see you in less than 100 days at the Great Iowa State Fair.
I look forward to it. Thank you, Paul.
All right, Greta Irwin, thank you so much.
If you have feedback for me or the program, send an email, markettomarket@iowapbs.org. Enjoy, good luck this spring, and we'll talk to you later.